WGNSTVGRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello again, everybody. This is Dome and Domer, an online conversation on Notre Dame football. I'm Mike Sullivan. Joining me today, Ed Sullivan and Mike Coffey from ND Nation. And we're going to talk for about 15 minutes on the state of Notre Dame football. Not a lot of good things to say, but yet there were a few glimmers of hope in the Purdue game, and I think a lot of Irish fans feel like maybe that was a foundation to build upon. But moving forward, one of the key questions that came out of the Purdue game was perhaps a budding quarterback controversy. So let's start off talking about the performance of Jimmy Clausen and Evan Sharpley against Purdue.
I think part of the issue with, if you're going to compare the two, is you have Jimmy Clausen, who was obviously playing part of the game with a banged-up hip. And if you can't get your lower body into a throw, it's kind of difficult to make yourself look good throwing. And I think part of the issue was, in the second half, Purdue maybe played back a little bit. You got a 23-0 lead, and they were almost daring Notre Dame to throw the entire game, and we finally started throwing and took
advantage. Okay, I'm going to cut you off here and argue with a couple of those points right out of the gate. I don't think I thought Clausen played well, and I don't think his hip injury had any impact, or I assume it's a hip injury. As soon as he got hurt, he essentially came back in for maybe one more play.
There was a key throw, actually, that he was way short on. It was a very weak duck, and I didn't know if it was the hip or actually even they were looking at ribs, and he just couldn't get anything on it, and he came out right after that. So I think that clearly was affected by his injury.
Yes, but his overall performance, he played most of the game healthy, and I thought he played well. Conversely, you mentioned Sharpley. I don't think it wasn't junk time that Sharpley got things done. Sharpley, you know, made it a game, and it certainly wasn't Purdue playing their bench, but you thought they were uninspired.
Well, I didn't think they were necessarily uninspired. I thought that they changed their defense slightly, maybe backed off a little bit with a 23-0 lead. But I think the other thing that changed was that Golden Tate came into the game, and now all of a sudden you have a 6'4" receiver with speed on go routes that the defense now has to be on. They can't bring the safeties up for run support. They have to respect the deep ball, and I think that made all the difference in the world with them being able to open the offense up.
Well, I agree that second half with a 23-0 lead, you're not going to see the kind of inspired defense that maybe we saw in the first half. I don't want to take anything away from the Irish if they found something, okay? But we need to find something against a quality opponent that is playing at a 0-0 in the first half, not just something when there's a 23-0 lead and the inevitability of a, you know, something swings back the other way.
Wait a minute. When you're as bad as we are, okay, don't give me, well, we got to do it against a quality opponent. No, you got to do it against somebody. You got to do it against air. When you execute as badly as we have, look, doing it against air is improvement.
Yeah, I would take that, but I'm talking about, like, you look in the South Bend Trib, and people are using phrases like, they found themselves, okay? I'm sorry, I don't consider any that we have found ourselves, and this wasn't like some breakthrough. Ah, finally, we're there.
No, well, we're certainly not there, but this was a breakthrough. This was much better execution. This resembled the offense we've seen for the last 2 years, the offense that made everybody say, wow, we've got the right guy calling the shots here.
To bring it back to the point, I want to see Evan Sharpley more. I think he deserves it. I'm still not quite sure why they just let him dip his toe in a little bit and then yanked him, and then he came in on junk time and yanked him. I think the kid has done some good things.
He's definitely done some good things, but part of Sharpley's problem has always been holding onto the ball too long and focusing on one receiver as opposed to another one. Even if you look at the great catches that Golden Tate made, he's making them with a guy draped all over him. Those balls were really kind of, not if not forced in there, pretty darn close.
Well, I certainly think one of them should never have been thrown, and Golden Tate just did a great job getting it.
Absolutely.
There's no question, Jimmy Clausen, the ball is just released and delivered in a whole other manner than what you see with Sharpley. There's so much more zip and accuracy on the throws.
He's the guy. True, but I can understand where it's coming from, where Sharpley has the advantage of having been in the system for 2 years. Plus, you look at Clausen, it's like right now he's obviously has a problem either with the rib or with the hip or whatever, and there were questions about the elbow early in the season. Are we seeing Jimmy Clausen just trying to muscle through some nagging tweaks here and there? And are we going to see once those heal up, are we going to see longer balls? Are we going to see better control in the passes?
Yeah, well, that could be. There could be something in the background there in terms of health-wise that everyone's keeping low. But I also think that there's been a lot of plays where Jimmy's held on to the ball too long, locked in on one guy, and that may have caused some sacks as well. And so I think if it's dead even in performance, then why not give Sharpley a try?
No, and that's the exact opposite thinking. If it's dead even, play the young kid who's your future.
What year is Sharpley?
A junior.
Okay, that's not like he's like some old washed-up guy that's going nowhere. And we need to win now. We need to do something to reverse this idiocy that's been going on of 0-5. If you got a guy who can help you to win, don't say, it's a close call. I'll play my young, inexperienced, true freshman who's never faced these things before.
Sharpley's never faced it. Sharpley, for all intent and purposes, is a freshman, too. He's never played.
He's been in the program for a year.
I understand that. In terms of game
two years.
Thank you. In terms of game experience, has done nothing. What has Sharpley done that Clawson hasn't done? I think they've performed about the same, and Clawson has far more upside and is the future. Play him now.
And we probably should note for the record that the two sacks in the game as Purdue came when Sharpley was in. I don't think Clawson got hit a couple times. I don't think he ever got sacked. I know that Sharpley got sacked at least twice.
I think it's great that Sharpley played well, gave us somebody off the bench who you don't, when he comes in the game, you don't have to shut the offense down and go three and out and hope you can get a punt off. I think it's great that we have that ability. But if Clawson is healthy, the upside that he has, the zip and release he has on the ball, tremendous. And he's going to begin to pick up all those things in terms of running the operation and the defense and so forth. He's your guy.
I don't know. 2 years in the program, 2 years more of knowledge and experience and knowing people and knowing Charlie and knowing the playbook and having practiced against college speed, major college speed, whereas Clawson didn't have any of that. I still think there's no reason you can't give Jimmy a lot of playing time, okay?
Quarterbacks? No, thank you.
What? Why? Because we're going to ruin the season?
What does it do for the future? It does nothing for the future, okay? You know, you talk about Sharpley, and, you know, he's earned this and he showed this and so forth. You don't have any idea that it's equal at practice who's making those decisions and who's making those
reads. Neither do you.
No, you're basing it on the performance in the Purdue game, which was essentially equal. So all things being equal, I'm going to assume in Weiss's judgment about what he sees at practice, what we see as the public is relatively the same, except you can just see the ball being zipped in there with Clawson, and you do not see that with Sharpley.
One thing I think, if we're talking about pocket presence, I was watching the game, and you almost get the feel that Sharpley may have a slight advantage there in that I think he's a better idea of where the rush is coming from. But Clawson, what he needs to learn is when you've got guys coming at you, it's not always the right thing to do to step back. You've got to learn to step up and just trust that pocket's going to be there. Clawson, I don't think, has that yet. Sharpley has that a little better than Clawson does.
I thought Sharpley did show some pocket presence against Purdue that he hadn't earlier, and he was fairly mobile in the pocket. And I will agree that Clawson maybe sometimes takes off and gets out of the pocket maybe prematurely, and this is something that Brady Quinn was so at, mobility within the pocket.
Yeah, I think Clawson's movements show that he's a true freshman, and this is how I used to escape the guys on high school. I could just sort of turn my back and run away from people and set up, or the interception where he's running to his left and he tries to throw back to his right, and suddenly that big monster not only catches up with him, but is able to get a hand on his arm. I don't think he's dealt with that kind of speed and that kind of size. But Sharpley does have a decent pocket presence. I think you got to go back and look at the Georgia Tech game and some of the decent things he did there as well.
Was that the 9-sack game, that Georgia Tech game?
Right, the 9 sacks that were caused by the quarterback. Is that your implication?
Many of which. Okay. All right, let's change gears a little bit. There's no quarterback controversy, so we don't need to talk about this anymore.
Of course.
Okay. You know, one of the things from the weekend that, you know, just I'm about fed up with, and this is, once again, the media. For one, Andre Ware.
He
was terrible.
Terrible.
And I thought his commentary about Sharpley relative to Clawson, I guess he's entitled to his opinion, right? That's what we're doing here. But he pretty much called out Charlie Weiss, you got to start this kid next week, blah, blah, blah. I just think that that's a ridiculous. He's causing trouble.
That's his job, though. That's what ESPN hires him to do. I mean, as I wrote on my blog last week, ESPN put the entertainment over the sports long, long ago, and they love nothing better than having one of their guys out there saying there should be a quarterback controversy at Notre Dame, even though they're. I mean, we've been talking about it the last 10 minutes or so, but. It's not a cut-and-dried issue, but Andre Ware will make it one because that'll get the pundits talking. That'll get Andre Ware of ESPN said this. More people paying attention, more eyeballs for their advertisers, et cetera,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, you know, two good plays by Sharpley, and all of a sudden Andre Ware was saying, you could just feel this team responding to Sharpley.
Those specifically were the comments that I was, you know, you could praise Sharpley's performance, that's fine. But just the intangibles that he was talking about, this team is playing for him, they're playing harder for Evan Sharpley. Give me a break. The rally was on before Sharpley came in, and he continued it.
Absolutely.
The good play was already happening.
Well, let me change to another media issue just to give my brother Mike here an opportunity to get it off his chest. Did you watch the USC game, USC Washington game at all?
Okay, thanks.
Here we go.
I appreciate the meatball being thrown up there.
Strap in, folks. Here we go.
Unbelievable. The love affair with St. Tyrone Willingham. I mean, Musburger and Herb Street. Herb Street's generally a pretty fair commentator, but my goodness, you know, this is the kind of guy I want my son's playing for.
If you want him to win.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a comparison to be made here. For one, Willingham saying, well, that Notre Dame team, that's not my team. You know, Coach Willingham has nothing to do with that team. Excuse me?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I know there are people out there who are tired of the Tyrone Willingham comparisons, and I can completely understand where they're coming from. But then things like this happen, where Tyrone Willingham goes on ABC television and basically completely disavows any fault or responsible, that's the word I'm looking for Notre Dame's current situation. Now, I wasn't expecting him to go out there and fall on his sword and say, yes, this is all my fault. No, it's not all his fault. Charlie Weiss is culpable here. But I would at least expect him to say, you know what, it's not really, I'm at Washington now, I want to talk about Washington.
Well, and I think he was put in a completely untenable situation with those questions. Maybe there was a better way to handle it. I am glad that ABC played not just the clip of that's not Coach Willingham's team, but a longer quote from him, because he put it a little more in context by saying, like, you know, I'm here now, not there. They got to respond to those coaches. Not, you know, from that standpoint, he's right. It's not his team.
No, here's how.
What do you want him to say? Do you want him to say, I really screwed it up?
No, here's what I want him to say. Just like El Kabong was saying. What he should have said was, let's talk about my football team at Washington. We're playing Southern Cal. I don't want to talk about the Notre Dame situation. I'm not at Notre Dame. Stop asking me about Notre Dame.
In Tyrone's, you know, obtuse way, that's what he was saying, referring to himself in the third person and all that.
No, he wasn't. He was taking his shots. You know, everybody says, well, he's never badmouthed Notre Dame publicly. He's never, you know, he's handled it with class. No, he hasn't. He's played the race card, and he's blamed Notre Dame for what happened.
And he's got his lapdogs like John Saunders and Mike Wilbon to do his dirty work for him.
But here's the thing.
What can happen is he gets in there, he gets to take the high road and lets all of his friends do the muckraking, and he comes out looking great when he's the one who's behind it.
No, that's true, but our success doesn't depend on his failure. If he does great at Washington, in the final analysis, that has nothing to do with what we do here and why we did what we did.
But that's not the way it's going to be painted by the media.
Exactly.
We're never going to win that. We're never going to win the media.
The final analysis might be 5 years from now, right? Until then, with the perceptual, you know, hits that we continue to take for being responsible with the football program, it just irks me, okay?
And it also hurts, I think, the cause of minority hiring, because don't think there are plenty of other schools who are watching Notre Dame get their butts kicked over this, and all of them realize, you know, I would have fired this guy too because he was terrible, but look at these guys are just getting kicked in the pants repeatedly.
Washington, they're stuck.
Well, that is, I think, a very significant issue that people have missed. When you do this because Notre Dame makes a change, based on merit or direction of the program, not based on race, and the whole world erupts, it makes it harder to choose an African-American or any minority the next time around.
You know, I want to make one quick comparison to Washington's performance against Southern Cal. And every, you know, oh, what a great job they did. And, you know, Tyrone Willingham, he's got this program. Okay, they're 2-3 and not necessarily going anywhere. But look statistically at that game SC had, what, 600, close to 600 yards in offense?
550 yards in offense. And the weird thing is Washington got almost as many yards to them in penalties as they actually move the ball themselves on offense.
And they had less than 200 yards in offense themselves.
Yes, they had 188 okay. yards offense, 166 yards in penalties.
SC had nearly 600 yards in offense. Okay, and the game was a three-point game that everybody says was close, and they you know really gave SC all they could handle. All right, now compared...
SC sleptwalked.
Absolutely they did. And the blocked punt you know sets up the late score, which makes the game closer than it really is. Mm-hmm. Now compare that game to the Fiesta Bowl in Weiss's first year, which generally is considered to be a blowout loss for Notre Dame, an embarrassing loss for Notre Dame, because Ohio State statistically had huge numbers. However, that game with 3 minutes to go is a seven-point game. Ohio State has third and nine, and we have Troy Smith wrapped up, and he gets away. We are one missed tackle, and we missed the tackle.
And the momentum for us offensively was all going our way at that point.
Absolutely. What Ohio State then does after they convert that first down, we now play essentially 11 guys in the box. They break through in an all-or-nothing type of defensive situation, the equivalent of pulling your goalie in hockey, and Ohio State tacks one on a busted 60-yard run. Suddenly, it's a 14-point embarrassing blowout loss. But you look at that SC Washington game, that's considered a victory for Washington in perceptually, and it drives me crazy. I need therapy on this.
Yes, you do. Well, one more point I thought I was thinking about this weekend. When you look at Auburn, and we have been really ringing the bell a lot of, we've got freshman offensive linemen, we've got these inexperienced offensive linemen, and that's been a big reason of our failures. Three freshmen on Auburn's offensive line.
Yeah, three freshmen
what
on offensive
line. What do we say about
line.
That?
Well, what I say about that is you have a senior quarterback behind them, senior wide receivers, junior and senior running backs. It's a lot easier to cover the mistakes of the... Now, Grant, playing three offensive linemen as freshmen are tough, and I think it was reflected in the fact that Auburn only had like 2.2 yards per rush. But when you're getting 13 to 15 yards every pass play, and you've got a smart quarterback who has smart receivers that he can throw to and experience outside the line, you can kind of mask the deficiencies that may come up because you've got three freshmen playing.
And Auburn struggled early in the year, not to the degree that we did, but to talk to me about Auburn's defense as well, keeping them in games. Our deficiencies are not just in the offensive line in terms of youth. They are across the whole program, and we are seeing, you know, could we have been better? Yes, we've talked about that a lot.
Absolutely.
But that is the fundamental reason.
And I think that that little comparison points back to, I think we mentioned a little bit at the end of the last show, there was a post on ND Nation comparing Notre Dame to to Miami in the
yes.
third year of Butch Davis. And when you look at just the number of scholarship athletes in the program and how low it is, and people don't understand how important depth is at a college Division I, at the higher levels of college Division I. I played back in the 80s at Villanova. We had a lot of good players, Howie Long among them. What we didn't have was when you got to the next level, then bums like me had to play. And that was the problem. We'd go up against Maryland or Penn State or Navy, and we could hang for a while. But they had depth. They were fleshed out everywhere. And God forbid somebody get injured. And who steps in from there, it's a huge drop.
And not only depth, you also need leadership. I mean, even if a senior is not playing, he's providing direction to the young kids who are playing. He's showing them how it's done. This is how we do it here. This you're not playing up to speed. It's not enough that the coaches are yelling at you. Your teammates are going to yell at you. The problem is not only you have a small number of upperclassmen, but the upperclassmen you do have, and it's not a character flaw, aren't really go-get-em extroverted guys. I mean, Tom Zbikowski, perfect example. Great kid, gives 100% every play. He's kind of an introverted guy. He's not going to grab a teammate by the face mask and say, pull your head out, we got to get this done. And those are the kind of guys you need in the upper classes, and just based on personality type and numbers, we just don't have them.
Absolutely. Irish fans, keep the faith. I'm still in Charlie's army. Absolutely.
I'm still there, too.
Okay, Ed, we'll let you know how it feels in a couple years when we win the national championship, and we were there the whole time. Okay, you've been listening to Dome and Domer. If you have any comments, go to domeanddomer.com, and you can post your comments. You can also send us an email at info@domeanddomer.com. We'll be back again on Thursday with a preview of the UCLA game. Until then, for Mike Coffey and Ed Sullivan, I'm Mike Sullivan. See you next time.